Hi, hier ist Carla. Ich habe heute IDK interviewt. Wir hatten bei der Aufnahme leider ein paar Soundprobleme. Ich hoffe, das Interview gefällt euch trotzdem und vielen Dank fürs Reinhören.
I'm here with IDK. How are you doing?
I'm good, good. Just in Paris right now. I woke up a couple hours ago, writing some music, you know, catching the vibes out here.
So you are on tour right now. Tonight you play in Paris, or did you play in Paris yesterday?
No, tonight is Paris. I got into Paris today.
And is that your first like world tour, or have you been to Europe before?
No, this is my second headlining tour and first world tour, but this was my first time headlining in Paris.
And how is tour life? Do you like it?
Yeah, so far so good. It's been amazing. I've had a lot of fun. I've been on tour earlier with Pusha T, and then I took a little break like 4 or 5 days, and then I came back on tour. So it's been pretty good. Yeah.
And do you have any time to see the cities you play in at all? Or is there no room in the schedule? Do you have any time to see the cities where you play, like at all, do some sightseeing or whatever?
Depends on the schedule. I've seen most of the cities, you know, and I'm like a homebody. I like to stay in the house most of the time. So I don't necessarily go out like that to see the city, but Paris, I went out a little bit yesterday. So.
Okay. Where did you go to in Paris? What did you do?
I just went to go eat at one of my favorite spots, Babylon.
Okay. So I was actually at one of your concerts 2 days ago in Cologne. And I didn't know what to expect before, but I had the best time because...
Thank you.
Yeah, you have just so high energy and it's just good vibes and it's so infectious, which I didn't know before because I haven't seen you live before. Okay. And it was just amazing how everyone was dancing and jumping the whole time. So no one stood still at all. So that was great. Mm-hmm. And I also appreciated, I don't know if it was intentional, but I appreciated how you made sure that the women in your audience feel safe. So mm-hmm. before you started playing the more mosh pit tracks, you made sure that all the women had a chance to come in front to the stage so that they aren't involved in the mosh pit if they don't want to. So as I said, I don't know if it was intentional, but I definitely noticed it and really appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very intentional. I know like I have a very diverse fan base and because my catalog is diverse. So there's some people that come that just want to hear a certain vibe and feel good and dance. And then there's some people that come that want to mosh around and all of those things. And I want to make sure that the people who don't want that are separated from it when it's time to do that. Just because, you know, usually when you have a performance, you either do one or the other. There's very few people that have both crowds. So I just try to make sure that the people who don't know about that other stuff, they're separated from it and not surprised.
Yeah, that's great because then everyone feels safe. Everyone can have a good time. So, but not everyone does that, you know, even though it seems so, not simple, but like the right thing to do, you know, that everyone in your audience feels safe, but not all artists do that, you know. So, yeah.
Thank you.
And in general, there were way more women than I expected. And you just said it, you have a very diverse fan base. So do you consciously try to make music that attracts a diverse group of people or does it just happen?
I think it depends on the time frame of life. I think right now, most of the music I'm making is to create an understanding between me being a Black man from America and then just women in general understanding that perspective and then me also trying to understand theirs. And that's who I've been speaking to in a lot of my music. However, because it's coming from a man's point of view and in a certain relatable point of view, there's a lot of men that like what I do too. And I think that it creates a diverse crowd just naturally, you know, but my music is mainly speaking to women.
Yeah, I see that. I want to talk about your latest project, Simple. So how did you and Kate Renata, who produced Simple, first connect?
We connected at a Jordan party. It was Michael Jordan. Jordan Brand had a party.
Okay.
And he was literally the DJ in that party. And I think someone from the Jordan team introduced us, Reggie Saunders. And from there, we created a friendship and relationship that led to us going in the studio. In that first studio session, he was like, yo, we got to make a project with me and you. And then it took 2 years before it actually happened. But we were just making music and having fun, you know.
Yeah, that's cool. So from kind of the first moment, you had the idea to work together.
Wondered what it would sound like. You know, I'd always hear like Goldlink do music with him back in the day. I love what they used to do. So I wonder what my take on this kind of music, this kind of sound would be. And that's how Simple came about.
Yeah. And so Simple is very groovy and like somewhat different from most of your sound before. So how did you adapt to the new sound? Was it easy or was it hard?
It wasn't hard. It was natural. It just naturally flowed together. I felt it, you know. It's always a feeling with music. That's why I am so, like, when I'm creating, I hate to be distracted when I catch that feeling, because I don't choose what happens. It comes whenever it just comes, and I have to, like, be ready for it, you know?
Yeah, I see. And do you think it floats so easily because you also have this personal connection?
With Kay?
Yeah, exactly, because you said you became friends and then you started working together. So do you think
it was kind of simultaneously, but what I will say is, no, I don't think so. I don't think our personal connection has anything to do with creative connection. Okay. Maybe a little bit, but the creative connection is unexplainable. It has nothing to do with even me. It's not me making this music. It's whatever happens at that time. I don't know.
Creative power source, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. I'm being honest. I know it sounds crazy, and a lot of people probably look at it like, all right, yeah. But it's like, seriously, that's when my best music comes out, is when I'm not in control.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that though. When you just let it, as you said, when you just let it flow and don't think too much about it. I mean,
That's how Dog Food happened. I had to go to an acne show in Paris. An hour or two making them song. I just started doing it, and then I looked back and I listened, and it was a whole song. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck? Like, damn, we made that.
Yeah, so you just mentioned Dog Food. And in general, the names of the tracks are a bit, I would say, unusual, like taco or dog food. So can you explain how you named these tracks and why?
I think they're unusual to a certain group of people, and that's the group of people that tend to consume a lot of the music that I listen to, that I make. But where I'm from, those words mean a lot. They're very powerful. Dog food is, you know, heroin, it's drugs, you know, and taco is short for taco shell, which basically is another word for bullet shells. And people use those words where I'm from. So they mean that, you know, a lot of people look at it like, oh, this is a funny name, this is a silly name, which I understand because they don't know, you know, what where it's coming from. However, it's far from that. These are serious words. They mean serious things, and that's why they're named those things.
Yes, and it definitely fits the theme of the album, because on the album you take the listeners to this neighborhood called Simple City in DC, but you talk from another person's perspective, from a friend, I think, who grew up in Simple City, but you grew up like in another area, but close to Simple City, right?
Yeah, basically. Okay.
And for someone who hasn't been to Simple City or ever heard of it before, how would you describe what it's like there?
I think it's like a lot of different neighborhoods where it's a lot of obviously crime and poverty, but somehow there's a lot of love there too, you know? It's like, that's what we see when we go there, and we see the perspective of the real perspective, the true perspective, the human perspective. I think that negativity has a way of living on the surface and making it hard for you to understand the positive when all you see is negative. But that place isn't a negative place. I think there's negative things that can happen. And I think that's a result of some of the issues and poverty and everything that's going on. But it's a beautiful place at the end of the day.
Yeah. So you just mentioned it. So like the feeling in these areas, or, you know, and that the community is very strong, but maybe especially people from the outside don't think there's much perspective there, or not so much hope. And that is why, you know, people tend to, I don't know, do illegal stuff, maybe end up in prison, et cetera, et cetera. So what would your approach be to better the situation for people in these areas?
It's always going to boil down to re-educating, changing the mentality, showing examples, realistic, that feel like they're within reach of another way to do things. And then time, taking the time, like it's going to take some time to really get that across. But those are the things that I would say.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't know if you would agree with me on that, but I think that due to COVID and now energy crisis, inflation, and in general, the cost of living crisis, I mean, in the US, but all over the world, that maybe more people are aware now of these kind of situations and these problems that maybe haven't been affected by them 3 years ago, like, you know, lower middle class and up, you know. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I feel that especially in media, it's way more discussed, that you don't have to maybe be, you know, that you don't have to be poor to have to struggle financially, right? Especially right now with all these things going on, and that it's just hard to get by at the moment. So I thought maybe due to more people being affected by these kind of issues, they are more aware, and maybe this could be the start of a, you know, a change in the approach. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of different ways to look at that. But I definitely agree that, you know, you don't have to be poor to struggle. That's for sure. I think that everything boils down to lifestyle versus percentage of income going to lifestyle. I think we're in a battle for convenience. That's why technology is getting better and better. That's why, you know, going to the restaurant and eating fast food is not enough. Now you have to, now there's a way to order it directly to your house and someone else picks it up, you know. You know, the fight for convenience is creating lifestyles which create this comfortability that makes it hard to go back to anything less. And that creates, you know, then that's when you look at percentage of income versus expenses. And that's really when you see struggle, whether you're rich, poor, it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, definitely. especially like in the last 3 years, it got so much worse. But I don't know, maybe there's, as hard as it sounds, but maybe there's a good thing in it, because now it's more presented in media and like overall more discussed. And it's not a problem of, I don't know, you know, certain neighborhoods anymore, but it's like a problem, a universal problem.
Mm-hmm. And it'd be more, you know.
Yeah. Well, at least I hope that this is what we get out of it. But
yeah.
So why was it so important to you to take your listeners to Simple City and to represent it?
I just think that with my art, nothing, it doesn't mean anything to me if there's no conversation. And the conversation is always going to be based off my upbringing and what I've seen and understanding the core audience that I have and how they grew up, and then trying to bridge the gap in that conversation so that judgment can look different. When they start to see other things, they start to, like, for instance, when they see Taco, it doesn't seem like just like a name, silly name anymore. It's like, oh, that means something. You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely. I can't remember where you said it, but you said before in an interview or another video that you like to teach. So, yeah, and I think you definitely do that with that album. So, like, you know, I'm from Germany and I haven't heard of Simple City before. Obviously, I was aware of neighborhoods like these in the US because they are represented by rappers, but not that neighborhood in particular. So,
yeah,
you educate us. Okay, so in general, you touch very heavy and emotional subjects in your lyrics, like police violence, systematic racism, drug abuse as coping mechanisms, and in other projects you also addressed childhood trauma and therapy. So have you always been able to address these heavy subjects and these personal subjects, or did you have to learn that?
I think I've always been able to talk about it. But I think I had to learn how to do it better.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Is it easier for you to express these subjects through music, or?
Yes. It's the easiest through music. Sorry, I'm trying to. But yeah, it's definitely easier for music than anything else.
Okay, I see. Yeah, sorry that we have to rush through this now. But so now we talked kind of about like the, not the area where you grew up, but like, kind of, because you grew up close to Simple City. But you were born in London, actually. And I was wondering if you have any connection to London at all. Did you live there as a child, or did you go straight to the US?
I came to America when I was 2 years old. So,
oh, okay.
Connection is more of a vibe and an understanding that, you know, than anything. Like, I didn't grow up there, but I do somehow feel at home when I'm around there. And I think that's where it comes in, like that subconscious memory. That's been instilled in me since I was, you know, left there at 2 years old. The feeling of going back at seven, you know, seeing my father for the first time, and then going back again at 20 something years old, seeing him for the second time, you know?
Yeah, that's nice. London is definitely, such a great city. So do you have any connection to UK rap at all? Because especially in the past few years, UK rap grew so much, and more and more US and UK rappers start collaborating. So are you into UK rap at all?
Yeah, definitely. Like a lot of different. Okay, I've been people like Dave, like Eddie One. I've skeptical of people who rap.
Can you see yourself collabing with a rapper from the UK? And if so, who would it be?
I think all the people I just named. I definitely see myself collaborating. That would be great to do that with any of those essential people like you.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so to wrap this up, Do you have any advice for upcoming artists?
I guess the most advice I can give is just continue and always be original as humanly possible. That's important. I think people don't understand how important that is. You know, you should definitely always, you know, be influenced. That's how where it starts, but strive to create something that'll influence others. And that then you'll see that's when you'll get a lot of people's attention.
Yes, I agree. Is that an advice that you got, or is that something that you learned through the years?
I've just been learning it.
Okay, I see. So what's next for you? What are you working on right now?
Some more songs for Simple. Probably come out soon. and repackaging that for the people who enjoyed it the first time. And I'm currently working on an album.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
And when can we expect that? Like, roughly, is there a time frame or not yet?
No.
Okay,
yes. When it's ready.
Well, I hope you have a great show in Paris tonight, and in general that the tour goes well.
Okay, thank you.
It's a great
thank
experience.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. Bye. Backspin.